Por lo tanto, espera captar votos de esa agrupación centrista. Es significativo que una de las asesoras en su campaña sea Mariana Elwin, hija del expresidente demócrata cristiano Patricio Elwin, el primer presidente electo luego del término de la dictadura militar. La candidata de la coalición de centro-izquierda, conformada por el Partido Demócrata Cristiano, el Partido Socialista, el Partido por la Democracia, el Partido Radical, el Partido Liberal y otros grupos menores, es Jasna Provoste. Ella misma, una demócrata cristiana que se impuso en una consulta popular que tuvo escasa convocatoria. En esa consulta ella derrotó a la candidata socialista Paula Narváez y al radical Carlos Maldonado. Ambos eran figuras de muy poco lustre político, por lo que el triunfo de la postulante demócrata cristiana era esperado. Más atrás se sitúan otros candidatos. Uno que ya ha estado en la boleta en tres ocasiones anteriores es Marco Enríquez Ominami, del Partido Progresista. Él es el hijo biológico de Miguel Enríquez, legendario líder del MIR, muerto en combate durante la dictadura. La extrema derecha se hace presente con el candidato José Antonio Kast, del Partido Republicano, que espera cosechar votos de los sectores afines al pinochetismo que pueden no estar muy dispuestos a apoyar a Sichel, especialmente si es que éste se mueve más hacia el centro político. Otro candidato, pero sin mayores posibilidades de triunfo, es el empresario Franco Parisi, que se postula por tercera vez y que políticamente se sitúa en la derecha. Cierra la lista de inscritos Eduardo Artés, de la Unión Patriótica. Este, en verdad, es un partido pequeño, de izquierda, sucesor de antiguas formaciones políticas que entonces eran afines al maoísmo. Un episodio bastante curioso y casi ridículo fue el protagonizado por Diego Ancalao, candidato inscrito por la llamada Lista del Pueblo, un heterogéneo conglomerado de independientes de izquierda, quien finalmente fue descalificado por haber presentado firmas falsas para su inscripción. Más aún, la mayor parte de esas firmas aparecía validada por un notario que había fallecido meses antes. Ancalao y su gente ahora deben enfrentar diversos casos de fraude y una acusación criminal lanzado por su propio ex conglomerado político. El fiasco de esta inscripción, sumado a otros episodios bochornosos, ha hecho que ese grupo que en las elecciones de constituyentes había alcanzado una alta representación, ahora se halle prácticamente en proceso de disolución. Un triste, aunque ilustrativo caso de cómo el lanzamiento de un movimiento basado solo en impulsos emocionales y el aprovechamiento de legítimas demandas populares en un momento dado, no bastan para conformar un grupo político, ni menos aún una alternativa seria a los partidos ya existentes. Un tema que cualquiera sea el candidato ganador tendrá que enfrentar es el hecho que al mismo tiempo que transcurre la campaña electoral presidencial, los miembros de la Convención Constitucional están trabajando en la redacción de una nueva constitución para el país, la que podría tener importantes efectos sobre la futura institucionalidad y, por ende, sobre su mandato. Por de pronto se habla de reducir las excesivas atribuciones que el presidente tiene a este momento. Otros incluso sugieren la instalación de un sistema parlamentario o semiparlamentario. El tema de la descentralización es también otro en que la convención puede introducir cambios significativos. Hasta ahora, Chile es un estado altamente centralizado, lo cuanto tanto en fundamentalmente diríamos en cuanto a la toma de decisiones y a la asignación de recursos. Es en todo caso interesante constatar que todos los candidatos coinciden en priorizar temas que en todos estos años no habían sido abordados: el sistema de previsión social, hoy prácticamente desmantelado y que, basado en el ahorro individual, resultó un total fracaso. Ese sistema fue instituido en la época de la dictadura. También se habla del mejoramiento de la educación y la salud, dos temas también altamente acuciantes. Aunque claro, mientras para la derecha la solución a estos temas pasa por hacer mejoras cosméticas al modelo neoliberal instalado desde la dictadura, en la izquierda e incluso en el centro político se ha afirmado la idea que es el sistema neoliberal mismo el que debe ser erradicado para poder dar solución a los agudos problemas de desigualdad e injusticia social que padece Chile. The presidential race in Chile, which should culminate next November 21st, already has all its protagonists at the starting line. Although, as has become traditional in that country, the definitive result as to who will be the future president will only be decided 1 month later in December after the runoff. 7 are the candidates to occupy the Palacio de la Moneda, as the presidential seat in the capital, Santiago, is called in Chile. Of these, only 3 are the main ones, thus also reflecting the main alignments of Chilean politics. On the left, Congressman Gabriel Boric, who at only 35 years old is the youngest candidate in the race. He won in a somewhat unexpected way in a primary in which he defeated the then favorite, the communist Daniel Jadue. Boric is the candidate supported by his conglomerate of parties called Frente Amplio and by the Communist Party. His main opponent is the candidate of the right wing, Sebastián Sichel, also an unexpected winner in the primary of that political alliance. He is a right wing independent who previously was a member of the Christian Democracy and therefore hopes to capture votes from that centrist group. It is significant that one of his campaign advisors, Mariana Elwin, daughter of former Christian Democrat President Patricio Elwin, the first president elected after the end of the military dictatorship. The candidate of the center-left coalition, formed by the Christian Democrat Party, the Socialist Party, the Party for Democracy, the Radical Party, the Liberal Party, and other minor groups, is Yasna Provoste, herself a Christian Democrat who won in a consultation that didn't gather many participants. In that consultation, she defeated the socialist candidate Paula Narváez and the radical Carlos Maldonado. Both were figures of very little political appeal, so the triumph of the Christian Democrat candidate was expected. Further behind are other candidates. One who has been on the ballot on 3 previous occasions is Marco Enrique Sominami of the Progressive Party. He is the biological son of Miguel Enriquez, legendary leader of the MIR, killed in combat during the dictatorship. The extreme right is present with the candidate José Antonio Kast of the Republican Party, who hopes to harvest votes from the sectors related to Pinochetism that may not be very willing to support Sichel, especially if he moves more to the political center. Another candidate, but without possibilities of winning, is businessman Franco Parisi, who is running for the third time and who is politically positioned on the right. Eduardo Artes, from the Patriotic Union, closes the list of registered candidates. This is a small left-wing party, successor of old political formations that were then akin to Maoism. A rather curious and almost ridiculous episode was that of Diego Ancalao, candidate registered by the so-called People's List, a heterogeneous coalition of left-wing independents, who was finally disqualified for having presented false signatures for his registration. Moreover, most of those signatures appear to have been validated by a notary who had died months earlier. Ancalao and his people must now face several cases of fraud and a criminal accusation launched by his own former political conglomerate. The fiasco of this registration, added to other embarrassing episodes, has meant that this group, which had achieved high representation in the constituent elections, is now practically in the process of disbanding. A sad but illustrative case of how the launching of a movement based only on emotional impulses and taken advantage of legitimate popular demands at a given moment is not enough to form a serious alternative to the existing parties. An issue that any winning candidate will have to face is the fact that at the same time that the presidential electoral campaign is taking place, the members of the Constitutional Convention are working on the drafting of a new constitution for the country, which could have important effects on Chile's future institutional structure and therefore on their mandate. For the time being, there is talk of reducing the excessive powers that the president has at the moment. Others even suggest the installation of a parliamentary or semi-parliamentary system. The issue of decentralization is also another area in which the convention can introduce significant changes. So far, Chile is a highly centralized state in terms of decision-making and resource allocation. In any case, it is interesting to note that all candidates coincide in prioritizing issues that have not been addressed in all these years. The social security system, today practically dismantled and which, based on individual savings, turned out to be a total failure. The improvement of the education and healthcare system is also an important issue today in Chile. Although, of course, while for the right, the solution to these issues is to make cosmetic improvements to the neoliberal model installed since the dictatorship, on the left, and even in the political center, the idea that it is the neoliberal system itself which must be eradicated in order to solve the acute problem of inequality and social injustice suffered by Chile has become part also of their agenda. Good day.
En la noche triste de mi desvarío, sin cesar me acuerdo de tu desamor, de todas las cosas que me prometiste y que no cumpliste para mi dolor. Este es mi desvelo que me ahoga el alma, que no pone calma a mi corazón, que solo me siento, que solo me hallo sufriendo y llorando mi cruel situación. ¿Por qué te fuiste, amor, dejándome así? Que me ahoga el alma, que no pone calma a mi corazón, que solo me siento, que solo me hallo sufriendo y llorando mi cruel situación. ¿Por qué te fuiste, amor?
Autorisé par l'agent enregistré du Parti libéral du Canada.
La maison, c'est l'endroit où nos familles bâtissent un avenir. Mais l'accès à la propriété est hors de portée pour trop de gens. C'est le temps que ça change. On a un plan pour lutter contre les pratiques déloyales. On vous aidera à obtenir votre mise de fonds plus rapidement ou même à louer avec option d'achat. Et on permettra à plus de 1,4 million de familles de s'installer dans leur maison. Rendons l'accès à la propriété juste et abordable et continuons d'avancer ensemble.
La elección federal es el lunes 20 de septiembre. Asegúrese de estar inscrito para votar. Y si ya está inscrito, debería recibir por correo una tarjeta de información para electores. Esa tarjeta le indica dónde y cuándo puede votar. Si no la recibe a más tardar el 10 de septiembre, o si la información que contiene es incorrecta, visite elections.ca. Es nuestro voto. Para información oficial sobre la votación y las medidas sanitarias y de seguridad implementadas, visite elections.ca o llame al 1-800-463-6868.
Siempre quedan palabras que decir, y algunas las he guardado para ti. Por eso voy, 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 voy hacia ti. Tengo solamente una adicción que me hace perder.
Y aquí tenemos el fichero latino de hoy, 5 de septiembre de 2021. Anuncio de interés artístico, la edición inglesa del libro Presencia chilena en la Belle Provence, Chilean Presence en la Belle Provence, escrito por Sergio Martínez y Roberto Hervas, ya está en venta en librería Argos en el 1915 Saint Catherine Oeste y en la librería Paragraph 2220 McGill College Avenue. Precio $10 más impuesto. The book Chilean Presence in La Belle Provence, English version of the book Presencia Chilena en la Belle Provence, written by Sergio Martinez and Roberto Hervas, is already on sale at Argos Bookstore, located at 1915 St. Catherine West, and Paragraph Bookstore on 2220 McGill College Avenue. Price $10 plus tax. La edición francesa, Présence Chilienne dans la Belle Provence, está a la venta en la librería de la Universidad de Montreal, 3200 Jean Briand, campus de la Universidad de Montreal, y en la librería Bertrand, en el 430 Saint-Pierre, en el viejo Montreal. Y también se puede comprar a través del internet en la librería Renombre. Tienen que buscar el sitio web de Renombre en Google, y también el libro se puede encargar por online. Présence chilienne dans la Belle Provence, versión francesa du livre Presencia chilena en la Belle Provence, en vente a partir de la. Disponible a la librairie de l'Université de Montréal, 30 Vincent et Jean Briand, Angle de Sales, prix $10 plus tax. Et à la librairie Bertrand, 430 Saint-Pierre, Vieux Montréal. Et aussi disponible online. Sur le site web de Renombre. Y anuncios de interés público: vacuna contra el COVID-19, reservaciones abiertas en Montreal para ser vacunado contra el COVID. Consultar y reservar en línea en el sitio web Click Santé en francés e inglés. También se puede llamar por teléfono al 1-877-644-4545. Y el tiempo para hoy, según Environment Canada, la Oficina Meteorológica Nacional de Canadá: combinación de sol y nubosidad con una temperatura máxima de 27 grados. Para esta noche, posibilidades de chubascos con una mínima de 18 grados. Y recuerde que si usted o su organismo comunitario tiene alguna información que desean difundir en el fichero latino, comuníquese con nosotros a Latin Time a nuestra dirección electrónica laplaza.info@gmail.com, o también puede enviarnos un mensaje en Facebook. Vaya a www.facebook.com/tiempolatino.latintime y de paso denos un like. Nuestra página Facebook también se actualiza ahora diariamente con noticias y reportajes sobre lo que ocurre en América Latina y el mundo. Síganos en Facebook. Y Tiempo Latino es escuchado en América Latina y en todo el mundo a través del internet. Entre al sitio de CKUT en la siguiente dirección: www.ckut.ca. Y usted puede acceder también a nuestro programa en cualquier otro horario, simplemente yendo al archivo de CKUT en el sitio web ya indicado y presionando Latin Time.
L'élection fédérale aura lieu le lundi 20 septembre. Vous pouvez voter d'avance. Les bureaux de vote par anticipation seront ouverts du 10 au 13 septembre. Si vous le préférez, vous pouvez faire une demande pour voter par la poste ou voter à un bureau d'Élections Canada avant le mardi 14 septembre, 18h. Consultez votre carte d'information de l'électeur pour connaître les façons de voter.
Pour l'information officielle sur le vote et nos mesures de santé et de sécurité, visitez élections.ca ou téléphonez au 1-800-463-6868. C'est notre vote.
Impresionado, la quiso al lado Y cuando él se propasó, saltó Tony, lo golpeó y la pelea empezó. La silla que voló, hubo sangre, tan solo un tiro. ¿Quién lo disparó? En el Copa, Copacabana, famoso lugar de La Habana. En el Copa, Copacabana, música, baile, pasiones de moda. En el Copa, perdió su amor. Cuando aún había show, ahora es disco. No para Lola, luciendo una y otra vez. Todo bajado en su vejez, sentada siempre al bar. Su pena quiere ahogar. Perdió su tono y perdió su vida. Ni puede razonar. En el Copa, Copacabana, famoso lugar de La Habana. En el Copa,
y esto ha sido todo por hoy. Tiempo Latino es una producción del Taller Latinoamericano de Comunicaciones.
Latin Time is a Latin American Communications Workshop production.
Estuvimos hoy con ustedes.
Our team today.
Daniel Lara y Sergio Martínez en las voces.
Sergio Martínez and Daniel Lara at the mics.
Y Rommel Cajavilca en la producción técnica, la compaginación y la selección musical.
And Rommel Cajavilca in the technical production, edition and music selection.
Manténgase en la sintonía de CKUT, nuestro próximo programa, The International Radio Report.
Stay tuned to CKUT, next, The International Radio Report.
Tengan todos ustedes un feliz domingo.
Have a happy Sunday.
De consignas sin valor. Hi, I'm Eric Cottrell of Lynn, Massachusetts. I get my weekly radio news on the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in beautiful Montreal.
Welcome, everyone, to the International Radio Report for Sunday, September the 5th, 2021. My name's Sheldon. I am here with Jill, and it is our weekly half hour of news and information from the world of radio here on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. You can reach us by email, radioreport@yahoo.com. We are live streaming and archived at the CKUT website, ckut.ca. Our Facebook group is International Radio Report. We welcome one new member this week, Deanna. Thank you for joining up with us. And our YouTube channel, if you'd like to go back and check the show again or listen to some of our previous programs, we are on YouTube at youtube.com/International Radio Report, and we invite you to subscribe to the channel. We have a lot of information for you this week. We'll try to get through as much of it as we can, and we thank everybody that's been sending along information for us as well. We're going to start the show off with an update to a story we had a couple months back. This will be for our local listeners in the Montreal area. Shom's DJ, morning DJ, Terry DeMonte, left the station a few months back, and we have some update on him from Gillian Page of the Montreal Gazette. The headline is, Terry DeMonte joining other beloved Montreal broadcasters in podcast land. And she starts the article with, he's back. You had to know longtime Shom morning DJ Terry DeMonte couldn't stay away from a microphone for long after he retired from the station last spring. After all, when you've got a great set of pipes, as he likes to call them, you want to keep using them. DeMonte is joining some other Montreal broadcasters with great pipes who've ended their gigs on commercial radio stations and have forged new beginnings of sorts in podcast land. Among them, former CJD program host John Pohl and Dr. Lori Batito. DeMonte is teaming up with his former Shom radio host, Ted Bird, who's now a morning show host on CHSV Light 106.7. That's in the Hudson-Saint-Lazare area of Quebec, for the Terry and Ted podcasts. And that podcast will be making its debut on September the 8th. So he had mentioned when he was leaving that he was going to disappear. We wouldn't hear anything from him for maybe 3 months or so. And he's kept his promise and has returned, not on the radio, but with a new podcast. So we'll probably hear more about this. It'll be debuting this week on September the 8th.
Yep, you can see the passion. He can't stay away from a microphone. We have news from Hurricane Ida that toppled New Orleans Tower, but Cumulus says that its four FM stations are back via Inside Radio. Small areas of New Orleans had a return of electricity on Wednesday, but the challenge for the city and broadcasters seemed to be mostly tied to the lost power. Cumulus Media says after Hurricane Ida-related outages impacted all of its stations in the market, all but one is back on the air. Modern Rock Alternative 92.3, WZRH, is the exception after the Category 4 storm decapitated the nearly 2,000-foot tower used by the station and iHeartMedia Classic Hits 104.1, The Spot KVDU. Conrad Trotman, Senior Vice President, Technology and Operations for Cumulus, said, thankfully, nobody was injured, and we continue to assess the full extent of the damage. Our backup facility for the station remains without power, so we are working for another solution to get that station back on the air as soon as possible. The FCC has given iHeart permission to broadcast KVDU from an emergency tower on the adult RNB WYLD FM 98.5 antenna using 850 watts. That site has a generator. KVDU does have a licensed backup tower site in downtown New Orleans, but iHeart told the FCC in a filing that there is no power at the building or any of downtown at the time. It expects to be at the WYLD site for at least a month. Three other FMs in the market owned by Cumulus, including adult R&B KMEZ FM 102.9, Country WRKN FM 106.1, and OTT AC 106.7, the Crew KKND FM are also all back up and running. It is likely more radio stations are out of service in the wake of Hurricane Ida than what the official count suggests. But as of Wednesday, the FCC said it knew of 13 radio stations that were dark. But its tally is a snapshot in time. It does not reflect the return of the Cumulus FMs, for example, and the number only reflects the stations that filed reports Wednesday with the FCC's Disaster Information Reporting System. But with power and telephone service in southern Louisiana still offline in many areas, other stations either were unable to report or simply had their hands full with the voluntary check-in. Some of the stations reported silent by FCC may now be back on the air. Also dark, per FCC, are iHeartMedia's classic hits 104.1, The Spot, KVDU New Orleans, and Lee Airwaves Talk, WJDR 98.3, and classic country The Legend, WSSM FM 104.9, in Prentice, Mississippi. The FCC also said one FM translator, W208FC, is off the air. There are four AMs silent, including Lee Airwaves classic hits The Pearl, WCJU, Columbia, Mississippi, 1450, and classic country The Legend, WHSY, Hattiesburg, Mississippi, 950, Shadowlands Communications Religious Sunshine, 800, WSHO, New Orleans, and iHeartMedia Gospel, Amen, 940, WYLD in New Orleans. So a lot of damages, of course, because of the very high winds and also all the rain, and which is actually continuing in the Northeast, where it's raining crazy from Pennsylvania to Massachusetts to New York and all the East Coast. It's a pretty tough storm, pretty much.
Yeah, the there were some problems with WWL, the Clear Channel in New Orleans as well. Not caused by the storm, but caused by Cuban jamming.
Oh, yeah.
There was a report of something they were calling the Whooper. And I was listening to it, and I heard this noise in the background. Didn't know what it was. I thought it was some kind of interference or whatever. Almost sounded like a siren of some sort. Anyways, it's been on the frequency, and apparently they say it's coming from Cuba. When one of the WWL did go off the air for a brief period, and the sound was still there, so they realized it wasn't coming from WWL. Kind of interesting. Next, we move to a bit of a controversial story. This comes from Yahoo News by Andy Ortiz. Mark Bernier, anti-vax Florida radio host, dies at 65 years old from COVID-19. Mark Bernier, a prominent conservative radio host from Daytona Beach, Florida, who was an outspoken opponent of COVID vaccine and mask mandates, died Saturday after a nearly month-long battle with COVID. He was 65 years old. It is with great sadness that WNDB and Southern Stone Communications announced the passing of Mark Bernier, who informed and entertained listeners on WNDB for over 30 years. Bernier, a native of Rhode Island, moved to the Daytona Beach area 3 decades ago and became a popular and outspoken voice for conservatism during his 3-hour afternoon talk show, as well as a strident voice against vaccinations of all sorts. On July 30th, he posted what would become his final tweet, in which he compared the U.S. government to Nazis in its push to get people vaccinated. He was responding to a tweet from Nikki Fried, a Democrat set to run against Florida's Ron DeSantis next year, who wrote, quote, "The greatest generation had to defeat the Nazis to preserve our way of life. You're only being asked to get a shot. So be a patriot, turn off the TV, and go get vaccinated." Bernier was first hospitalized with COVID on August the 7th after being off the air and homesick for the week leading up to his admittance, but it was unclear how severe his symptoms were at the time. Bernier was the second anti-vax radio host to pass away from COVID in the past few weeks. Phil Valentine, a conservative talk radio host from Tennessee, who had been a vaccine skeptic until he was hospitalized from COVID-19, died. He was 61. He had been a skeptic of coronavirus vaccines, but after he tested positive for COVID-19 and prior to his hospitalization, he told his listeners to consider, quote, "If I get this COVID thing, do I have a chance of dying from it? If so," he advised them to get vaccinated. He said he chose not to get vaccinated because he thought he probably wouldn't die. After Valentine was moved into a critical care unit, Valentine said his brother regretted that he wasn't a more vocal advocate for vaccination. So he did come out and admit to his listeners that, you know, he may have been wrong. I don't think that Mark Bernier had a chance to address his listeners before he ended up in hospital and eventually passed away. So, you know, this is an example of, you know, people listen to these reports. You know, you can believe what you want, but people hearing things in the media can be easily influenced.
Yep.
There's a lot of false information, a lot of distorted information going around. So, you know, whether you believe in them or whether you don't, I think you really, what this tells you is you really have to look at both sides of the coin and evaluate what you're listening to and what the sources of the information are that you're listening to as well.
Yeah, and hopefully some people will maybe change their minds and go get vaccinated after these stories. So there's some coverage coming up of 9/11 as we are in the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 disaster. ABC News, week-long 9/11 coverage coming up. This is via Radio Inc. 9/11, 20 years later, America Remembers is a special week of coverage across the ABC network, radio, and streaming platforms, along with a full 24 hours of coverage on Saturday, September 11th. Plans call for four prime specials and a special five-part documentary series. ABC News will provide an hour-long special anchored by correspondent Aaron Katursky, which will be available midweek for affiliates to air on demand. The special will also be available later in an episode of the ABC News Radio Specials podcast, available on major listening platforms. On Saturday, September 11th, ABC News Radio will provide live anchored coverage of the annual commemoration ceremony. And in a related event, there will be a special NYC event that marks the 20th anniversary of 9/11. Mike KC2SYF via Alex Kaminsky in Springboro, Ohio. Many of the hams will be on the air on September 11th, calling QRZ from New York City. We're in a very different place 20 years ago. Some of them hurried to the World Trade Center in Manhattan as first responders to the terror strikes that day. They were answering a call then. And this year, they are the ones calling to mark the painful anniversary. The first responders of their friends and supporters are hams in the Northeast Wireless Radio Club, the NW2C, and the Great South Bay Amateur Radio Club, W2GSB. They will be on the air together from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time, operating special event station Whiskey 2 Tango, W2T, using CW, SSB, and digital modes. Hams may also contact them via satellite. In the words of their station, Whiskey 2 Tango, "We will never forget. Mark it on your calendar." So these are two things to look forward. You know, there's going to be a lot of coverage on 9/11. I mean, it was a major event, and it's fun to see also radio-related events coming through with this. And what's happening with the sun? So the sun has been having quite some activity. There were some solar flares happening this week at times. There were two coronal mass ejections that we thought would create geomagnetic storms, but it seems that they missed our planet. So right now, two sunspot groups on the sun. The solar flux around 86. It bumped up to almost 100 this week, and notice that 10 meters was actually open, so shows that activity is picking up, and even the higher frequencies. The K index is rather quiet right now, and if we look at what's about to happen soon, well, there's some solar wind flowing from a coronal hole that could reach the Earth on September 5th, So this might actually cause some little problems. If propagation is not up to par, that could be the cause. And you know what? The best way to check out what's happening is to turn on that radio and listen.
This is John Fisher of North Chelmsford, Massachusetts. I listen to the International Radio Port every Sunday morning at 10:30 on CKUT 90.3 FM in the fair city of Montreal.
Next on our show, we have a late-breaking story from National Public Radio, a report that they aired about U.S.-funded journalists in Afghanistan fearing for their lives. Word has come out that a number of contracted journalists by the United States working in Afghanistan are still there and did not make it out in the evacuation before the August 31st deadline. And there's a lot of concern about this, obviously, with the Taliban crackdowns on the media in particular. So NPR and also Vermont Public Radio aired this piece. It's by Michelle Kellerman. And it says, among the Afghans left behind after America's withdrawal are journalists working for the U.S. government-funded media. About 600 of them, including family members, are worried about Taliban reprisals. So we'll take a listen to this two-minute piece, and it sounds like a pretty dire situation possibly for some of these contracted journalists.
Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, grew out of the Cold War, running surrogate stations behind the Iron Curtain in countries with no free press. For the past nearly two decades, it has run a station in Afghanistan, broadcasting in Dari and Pashto. And even Taliban fighters have been known to call into its talk shows, according to Jamie Fly, who heads RFERL.
And so we are a known quantity to the Taliban. Because of that, we've faced harassment from the Taliban, especially out in the provinces. We sadly have lost colleagues in recent years due to attacks.
So he had been working for months to get some of the more vulnerable reporters out, frustrated by a complicated visa process. Then came the rapid fall of Kabul and a chaotic evacuation effort. Fly says he got very few of his journalists out.
They, like tens of thousands of other Afghan nationals who wish to leave, but who failed to get evacuated, are now stuck with very few options.
State Department spokesperson Ned Price says the U.S. tried to evacuate this group of reporters, but the ISIS-K suicide bombing outside Kabul's airport changed everything.
It stood in the way of our ability to bring these individuals to safety before August 31st. But I am telling you, we have told them that we have a commitment to these individuals.
Price says the U.S. is providing them with, as he puts it, tailored guidance, adding the U.S. is looking at all options from land routes to flights if and when the airport in Kabul reopens. A former U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan and RFERL board member, Ryan Crocker, calls this a moment to sit tight.
It's probably not a great time to hire a taxi and head for the border.
Crocker wants to keep up the pressure on the State Department to negotiate safe passage for these U.S.-funded journalists. The Taliban have said they will allow Afghans with visas to leave, and so far they have not stopped the radio station from broadcasting, but Jamie Fly is clearly worried.
We're not sure ultimately what the Taliban's approach to journalists in general will be, what the Taliban's approach to us will be.
And that leads to a lot of uncertainty for his colleagues stuck in Afghanistan. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
We were saying, and we talked about in the, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, is the fact that journalists are stuck there and it's difficult to get out. And now it's even worse now that everybody's pretty much left behind. And it's sad that they didn't take enough time to realize quickly what was happening and how fast things were actually happening to, you know, take out all these people. The journalists are definitely in danger. And when you are a journalist, you talk about what's happening, you talk about what you see, it always causes some friction. So hopefully, either they'll find a way to get out or hopefully they're not going to be armed.
The issue with these journalists, of course, though, is that they are they're not U.S. citizens. Yeah. They were working for the Voice of America and Radio Free Liberty, Radio Europe. So with the broadcasters of the journalists themselves, plus family members and what have you, you're looking at a total of about 500 people. So, you know, it's maybe even more difficult that they're not Americans, that, you know, they were the first ones evacuated. These are almost secondary on a totem pole level, I guess, and the media staffers are stuck. So we'll see what happens with this.
Yeah, hope it doesn't get too bad. So you got a story about SiriusXM.
Yeah, a quick one here for anybody a subscriber to SiriusXM. They are devoting some new channels to female artists. SiriusXM has launched three new music channels focusing on female artists. The limited-run channels Queens of Hip Hop, Women of Rock, and Women of Country will be available throughout the month of September. The Queen of Hip Hop features music from today's biggest female hip hop artists, including Cardi B, Megan Thee Stallion, Nicki Minaj, and others. Listeners will also hear music from the queens who've paved the way, including Queen Latifah, Missy Elliott, and Lil' Kim. The Women of Rock will hear the architects of classic rock like Stevie Nicks, Joan Jett, 80s icons like Blondie, Susie Sue of Susie and the Banshees, grunge and alternative queens like Courtney Love and Fiona Apple, and contemporary trailblazers like Brittany Howard, St. Vincent, and Haim. The Women of Country, where the original trailblazers of the Grand Old Opry meet the women who continue to break new barriers today. So you'll be hearing people like Miranda Lambert, Carrie Underwood, Dolly Parton, Mickey Guyton, Loretta Lynn, Maren Morris, and more. All three channels will be available on the SiriusXM app and will also pop up on the satellite through Wednesday, September the 15th. Women of Rock will be available via satellite channel 104 on Wednesday, September 22nd through Thursday, October 7th. Women of Country will be available via satellite on channel 105 on Friday, September the 17th through Thursday, September the 23rd. So you can check out those channels if you are a Sirius subscriber.
That sounds good. So we have a Swiss FM shutdown that is reverting to the original 2024 date. This is via Paul McLean of Radio World. The shutdown of FM broadcasting in Switzerland will take place on its original schedule by the end of 2024, not on an accelerated schedule that had been set out more recently. That's according to a digital working group run by the country's radio industry and government regulator. DigiMig for Digital Migration announced Thursday that VHF radio licenses will expire December 31st, 2024. The originally planned switch-off date was set in 2014. DigiMig has estimated that almost three-quarters of radio use was digital as of the end of last year, a level of penetration that prompted a plan to advance the shutdown of FM to August 2022 for the Swiss Broadcasting Corporation and to January 2023 for private radio. But now the group says that although broadcasters in Germany and Italian-speaking Switzerland were mostly ready for the earlier schedule, not enough radio broadcasters in French-speaking Switzerland would be prepared. A later date also gives consumers more time for the changeover, it said. While almost all new cars sold in the country are now DAB Plus compatible, it said there is still a need for retrofitting many older cars to receive digital. Further, broadcasters will save money with the postponement because stations won't have to broadcast in both formats for an extended period of time. In 2017, Norway became the first country to migrate from FM to digital. Well, in a mountainous country like Switzerland, I'm not sure that is the best of ideas, but we'll see how it goes. But apparently the penetration in the market is pretty good, so it seems people are picking up.
Although they've extended it quite a long
extension, they have.
10 more years.
It took a lot of time for them to actually get there.
Next, we go to Taiwan, and we thank Ralph Bender of Germany for this story. Radio Taiwan International is holding a contest. RTI, or Radio Taiwan International, is holding a contest called Sounds That Move, Travel with Sound Postcards. The contest enables the public to travel to other parts of the world through the sounds recorded and photos taken by participants. An exhibit of sound postcards will be held online to allow the public to enjoy a different kind of travel experience at this time of the year. You can apply until the 30th of September 2021 if you want to participate. And you can find more information at their website, and we'll put up a link to it. It is rti.org.tw, and you'll have all the information on there.
That sounds good. Well, we have some quick news from Doug Copeland, a CIDX member in Winnipeg, Manitoba, that saw that on the Deutsche Welle website, they are stopping QSL cards. So as of September 1st, you cannot get QSLs anymore, which is a trend. And I mean, you know, radio stations today don't really need to have reception reports anymore. They can just by themselves know if their signal is actually propagating. And it costs some money, and it costs staff also at the same time.
Yeah, for some of our listeners who are not shortwave listeners, you know, we have a lot of people who just like to listen to what we have to say about radio in general. Shortwave listeners in particular, a lot of them are QSL card hunters. They're verification cards that radio stations would send to a listener if the listener sent them a reception report of their station. Yeah. So as Jill said, a lot of stations have stopped this practice. It was a voluntary practice. They weren't forced to do this. It was just something they chose to do. But many stations have stopped it, and now we have to add Deutsche Welle, the voice of Germany, to that list.
And a very quick note, we are wishing a happy 85th anniversary to Radio Prague. So they celebrated their 85th anniversary this week on August 31st, when they started way back in 1936. And they do QSL, by the way, if you want a QSL. And they are heard via WRMI, so you can check out the schedules. And we got a ham radio contest coming up.
Yeah, we have a few coming up this weekend. If you'd like to participate in them, or just to listen if you're a shortwave listener. The first is a big one, actually, the Worked All Europe DX contest. It's 0-100 to September the 11th to 23-59 September the 12th, sponsored by the Deutsche Amateur Radio Club. It's 3.5, 7, 14, 21, and 28 megahertz bands. It is a single sideband or phone. And a contest QSO or contact can be only conducted between a European and a non-European ham operator. So that's kind of unique. There should be a lot of interesting stations on the air for that one.
The ARRL September VHF contest, 18 Zulu September 11th to 03 Zulu September 13th, sponsored by the American Radio Relay League. The objective for amateurs in the U.S. and Canada to work as many amateur stations in as many different 2 degrees by 1 degree Maidenhead grid squares as possible using authorized frequencies above 50 megahertz. Stations outside the U.S. and Canada may only work stations in U.S. and Canada, all modes 6 meters and up.
The North American Sprint CW, 0-100 to 0-400, September the 12th, sponsored by the National Contest Journal. The mode is CW only. It's 80, 40, and 20 meters only as well.
And there's the Four States QRP Group Second Sunday Sprint, 0 Zulu to 02 Zulu, September 13th, sponsored by the Four States QRP Group. Bands 160, 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10 only. And the modes CW and SSB, QRP only, that's low power. And we are out of time.
All right. Very good. Lots of information this week. We thank everyone for their input and for tuning into the show today. We'll have links to a lot of these stories and links to all of these contests on our Facebook page. And if you missed the show, you can check it out on the archives at ckut.ca or on our YouTube channel, International Radio Report. Thanks for tuning in today. We'll talk to you again next Sunday with the next edition of the International Radio Report on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Have a great week, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Reason.